Welcome to Quarantined with the Good Graces. I'm your host, Kim Weira of the Good Graces, and today in episode 12, the season finale of Quarantined, I'm talking with Monica Arrington, a singer-songwriter and composer from Atlanta who performs under the name Nerd Queen. I've known Monica for about 15 years, but it's only been the past 7 or so that I was fortunate to become good friends with and even started collaborating with her. She often lent her backing vocals and percussive talents to the Good Graces, and we even hit the road together several years back to perform at a really great South by Southwest day party. Had a wonderful time. We had a very honest, deep, and varied conversation that felt very important for me to have. We touched on Kimono My House and the recent birthday bash in which she performed 3 times with 3 different projects over the course of the weekend. We talked about the defining qualities of her primary musical outlet, Nerd Queen, how that kind of compares and contrasts with Hills in the Holler and Black Fox, and how the past year has been for her, considering not only COVID, but also all the events surrounding the murder of George Floyd, Black Lives Matter, etc., and why it's important to be open to having difficult conversations, but a very, very critical aspect to them is trust, and it needs to be earned. I am so grateful for Monica's patience, her insight, her friendship. A reminder, you can support this, all my other stuff, by becoming a patron. So check that out, if you will, patreon.com/KimWeir. Now, on with it.
Thank you, and to get to talk to you today. Gosh, for people listening, I've known Monica for a long time. over the years, we became like more, less just acquaintances and more friends. And it's been a joy getting to know her better and share the stage with her and be just a fan of yours also. So, wanted to have you on here mainly because you're awesome, but what made me think, oh, Monica would be such a great guest, that we'd have so much cool stuff to talk about, was we recently had the Kimono My House birthday bash show, which was a like Friday, Saturday, Sunday thing, and Monica was the only person to play all 3 days with 3 different musical outfits. So I was really curious, like, does the way that you approach, like, your contributions to, say, Hills in the Holler and Black Fox, like, how does that compare to your solo stuff? Because, like, for me, I get different things from different projects. It's almost like it taps into and, like, feeds different parts of my brain and my personality. And I was curious if you feel the same. Like, talk a little bit about that, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when I first started out as Nerd Queen, well, even before then, my background was in music and, you know, went to school for music, and I wanted to be, you know, composer, musician. And one of the first things I was facing in that was just being able to perform with others, realizing that I wasn't one to play well with others, quite honestly. And when it came to songwriting and the whole process of recording, being a woman, hate this phrase, woman in music, being a woman in music, you know, you run into certain types of people who they see you and they see opportunities that are not necessarily what you want. And they just have this vision of you, or, you know, they don't think that you have what it takes, or, you know, just various things. So
yeah,
I think what kept me from playing with others was partly that, like, you know, I am competent in what I do. So I stayed away from playing with others, and I would have people come join me in the Nerd Queen thing. Mm-hmm. And I think what finally happened was opportunity showed up, you know, playing with you and other friends in, you know, just like guest spots and things like that. And the band, Black Fox, the lead singer, Stacey Cargill, he just, you know, he's you know, if you know him, he's super sweet, but he's also really just kind of like, I want you in my band, come be a singer. And, you know, I guess the timing was right. And I was like, okay, sure. You know, it was kind of low stakes in that, you know, just be a singer, you know, yeah. versus being a performer, being, you know, this thing. So it started from there. And when it came to the Hills and the Holler, which again, Stacey is a part of that. Mm-hmm. I'd always had ideals of, again, my background being in music, also coming from a musical family. I wanted to tap into, you know, I guess more of my roots growing up in the church and things like that. I never got around to asking my cousins, like, hey, we should like make music together, because my mom and her sisters had a singing group back in the day, you know,
gospel
a cappella group. So I was like, oh, you know, that would be so great. Let's do a project or two, you know, just something that just bounced around in my brain for a while. And then Stacey mentions it, and I was like, get out of my brain, you know. So it all just, you know, fell right into place, you know. So things that I kind of already had in mind, it wasn't anything new that was bouncing around my brain. It was just a timing was just coming through for us. And it's great to be able to go back and nerd out about history of music and where music, you know, comes from and things like that. So it's been great.
Yeah. So do you guys spend a good bit of time in Hills and the Holler, like kind of like doing research, I guess, to come up with like things that you want to play, or was all that just there and you kind of just throw things out there? How does that work?
Well, you know, I tend to be laid back. I'm open for much of anything. And mm-hmm. I do trust Stacey in that. At first he had some songs and I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I grew up playing the song. We played it differently, as you know, in the South, like the difference between one small town and another small town might be a changing of words or phrases or something. And so I think what we ran into at the very beginning was knowing some of the same songs, but knowing them in different versions of.
Oh, wow.
And so we had to start making some choices for our basic set. And of course, he had some favorites and I brought some favorites, where, you know, again, some standards that, you know, most people in the South kind of know. We are, you know, Stacey does, and I agree, like Stacey wants to do more originals, and I'm a slow songwriter. That's one thing about me. I hold on to songs way too long. As I would go back to my recordings, I'm like, oh my gosh, it was 10, 11 years ago. Oh my goodness. But yeah, so I'm a slow songwriter, and he is not. He is the opposite. He has so many songs. But I think, yeah, when we started off, we wanted something that helps connect people together. Just reminding people, like, we have a rich heritage in the South that a lot of people just don't pay attention to anymore. It's a lost art. You know, where, you know, kids are like, oh, you know, that's old timey music, nobody needs to hear that, you know, that kind of thing. It's like, no, it's there's so much history and so much richness in it. So again, just nerding out with music, you know, revisiting a lot of things.
I love it. That's super cool. And I mean, you might say you're a slow songwriter, but one thing, your music is so intentional though. And when you listen to it, you get that like time was put into that. But it never sounds overworked by any means, you know? So I mean, kudos to you for being that intentional and just like putting so much thought into it. I love, one of my favorite things about your music is just the minimalism of it. It's so cool. And it helps like showcase your voice so well. And obviously, like, to me, the minimalism of it and your voice have always been sort of like what defines Nerd Queen, in my opinion. So I'm curious, like, who are some of your like favorite singers
or songwriters, like when you were first starting Nerd Queen, like did you have any sort of designs on doing things like a certain way? Were you inspired by anybody, or has it just been coming out the way it comes out?
Well, I mean, yeah, there are those influences that you don't think they're influences, but then they end up being influences, like, mm-hmm. You know, the things that your parents listen to, like Stevie Wonder, definitely an influence. Cool. Just all of those soul singers from, you know, the late 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. And then me coming into my own as a teenager or a young kid in the age of what MTV, starting out, you know, branching out and, you know, mm-hmm. loving Prince and Madonna yeah. and Whitney Houston and, awesome. You know, those kinds of things, you know, as far as like growing up, kind of listening to that pop music and finding your voice amongst the populace, you know, so like, oh, you know, this speaks to me versus, oh, that's my parents' music. Oh, but yeah. this is for me kind of thing. So yeah, I was totally a kid of the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. A lot of, yeah, let's say pop, then hair metal.
Oh, wow, really?
Some grunge. Oh my gosh, I'm so like bad. I can sing some Poison.
Oh my God, girl.
And yeah, so, you know, then the 90s grunge and stuff and, you know, just that kind yeah. of music. Well, and then I started writing songs early. Like I remember my first song was when I was 11.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't even really think about it necessarily as far as like, well, I can have that as a job. That was just some kind of way for me to get feelings out, mm-hmm. you know? So yeah. It's, you know, just a way to get your feelings out. And I was always a singing kid. That was another, you know, thing about mm-hmm. my parents. You know, my dad loved 8-tracks and he would just have us in, you know, hanging out and singing songs and stuff, or have me singing songs because I was yeah. the one, I want to sing, I want to sing, you know, so, mm-hmm. Yeah, just having all of that is like musical food for me. Like I don't think I ever was like feeling like, oh, that's not for me kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just hungry for it all. Like I loved all music. That's when it came to me writing, it was just, like I said, it's just a way for me to get feelings out. Mm-hmm. And then I do remember the moment that it hit me where I was listening to the radio, of course, pop music. Yeah. And I hear this singer and it's like, you know, okay, song. And then the DJ comes on. He's like, that's Debbie Gibson. She's only 16 years old. And I was like, you know, like, what? I was like, wait a minute. She wrote that? It's like, wait, I can do that. You know, so that, I guess, was the spark nice. That was wow. like, I can do that. I mean, yeah. you know, it's not like a horrible song is, but, you know, I didn't feel intimidated by mm-hmm. that. You know, like I said, it was like, I can do that. So I made it a mission for myself to practice songwriting as a teenager. Like I even set up yeah. rules for myself for at least a few years of writing a song a month, at least one. Mm-hmm. And up until like, I think I got to high school and things got busy, you know, life, sure. you know, you get ready for college and stuff. And, you know, that kind of habit yeah. fell off. But yeah, I think from there, it started me into thinking about how I can have my life as a musician, as a songwriter, at least, you know, and start setting that plan in place for myself.
Yeah. And so the name Nerd Queen, I mean, mm-hmm. it's sort of a, you know, combination of two almost opposite sorts of things. And then there's the, like the fun spelling to it also. Mm-hmm. So tell me about that. What does that mean to you?
Well, I was looking for like, as a teenager, I was like, I'm going to start my own label, you know? So I started like, once I started to realize Debbie Gibson wrote songs and she had publishing and I was like, what? Oh no, I got to do this. I have to be a part of this. So I started doing my own research, like, you know, just looking up like record labels and addresses and going to the library, look, you know, reading books and stuff as much as I could at the time. Because again, this is like the late 80s, early 90s. It wasn't very much out there. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, maybe I can put out my own music. So I wanted to have my own record label. I think by the time I was in high school, I was like, yeah, I'm going to have my own like company record label. And so I was thinking of names and thinking of things that I guess kind of, you know, speak to me. Again, going in school, did really well in school. I enjoyed learning and all this other stuff. And I called myself a nerd. So it wasn't even like, of course, yeah, people called me a nerd, but I called myself a nerd also, but just knowing like, I like learning, and if I'm going to be a nerd, I'm going to be top nerd, you know, the queen of them all. So, yeah, so that's kind of where it all came from, you know, just coming up with like that dream of like, I don't know where it is, but I even had like, you know, little logo and everything, you know, so I had a little bit of a plan, you know, so.
That's awesome. Yeah. It sounds like pretty early on you kind of locked into that, like gave it an identity, maybe even before it existed, right? Mm-hmm. That's so cool.
Even when it came to the music, as I was learning, again, my education was actually really great in high school, where I went to a magnet school, mm-hmm. again, part of the plan, a magnet school where I started learning classical voice and musical theater. Mm-hmm. Wanted to go to school for music. I started to have these ideas of how I wanted to create my image, you know, so as I started to learn how to be a performer through my, you know, magnet school, because of course, opera singers, they have to, you know, play roles and sing songs and wear costumes and do all this stuff. I started thinking, well, how can I apply this to me as a performer? Like, I have to learn how to be a performer and learn how to set my stage, you know, just like in musical theater, you know, that kind of thing. So everything I did has purpose, and even how I present myself, it's kind of like a play on making fun of, I hate to say, making fun of the public in a way, mm-hmm. where people just assume somebody who looks like me, mm-hmm. If they're doing music, they sound a certain way and they must, you know, be a part of a certain thing, when really that's not the case. I'm like the, you know, the ace, you know, the wild card, literally. And I used that. I played on that.
Playing on people's assumptions.
I played on everybody's assumptions, just knowing that, and I even do, even today, like, not even today, but, you know, it's been a year since, you know, since COVID, and I haven't been giving music lessons, you know, as you know, mm-hmm. I give music lessons, and it's always fun to go sit in the music store, waiting around for students playing guitar, and watching all the people look at me like, what in the world? And even just going, like, making a plan right now to go to a different music store for some equipment, I'm dressed a certain way. They probably think, like, oh, she must be, you know, whatever. You know, I can just imagine myself going into the guitar room and they're like, oh, do you need help, little lady? You know, all kinds of craziness. And I'm like, oh, I don't need any help. Here we go. You know, it's like, it tickles me. It really does. And I know over the years I've had, you know, friends, other women, you know, performers have this anger when it comes to those assumptions, but I just play with it. I'm just like, I just use it to my benefit.
You know, it can be fun. I totally relate to that, because like, you didn't see many girls doing that in the 90s. Yeah. And so then I would kind of laugh at the silly comments. Eventually they got old and I would be a little meaner when someone would say something stupid to me. But yeah, you can kind of have fun with those things. And I hope that, you know, it is a way of educating people, mm-hmm. too, in like in a nicer way.
because it's educate, you know, the more people see things like that, then it is, it shows them that those assumptions are, you know what they say about assumptions.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Sure. So I totally played on it. And I feel it gave me, I'm not to say I didn't have confidence, but it gave me that confidence knowing that secretly I have this secret. Like I'm about to blow your mind and you have no idea.
Totally. It's like a superpower. It's like you're a superhero. It's like this other identity that it's like there's Monica and then it's like, yeah, but why do you see Nerd Queen? That's so cool. So how do you, you mentioned a little bit about, you know, obviously being female playing music, there's everything that comes with that. And there's, you know, I mean, your stuff, I think you could describe it as, it's kind of sort of indie, like, you know, you could be on indie rock bills and it wouldn't be out of place. Yeah. And you probably would be the only person of color on that bill. Mm-hmm. I mean, what about that? Like, has that been something that you just similarly like the idea of challenging people's assumptions with that?
Yeah. I think early on, I already knew that was going to be an issue, which there's yet even more nuance in that.
Right.
I didn't get as much pushback from women as I did men, black men.
Okay.
Wow, where really? It was like, oh yeah, yeah. Where, you know, they would probably assume that I play piano, which I kind of do, but not in public, you know. So, you know, I'm carrying my case, and they're like, oh, is that, you know, keyboard or whatever, you play for a church or you know that kind of thing. I was like, oh, no, I don't do that. And then it comes in the whole idea of, oh, I hate to make this comparison, like the Ike Turner feeling of like, oh, I'm going to make you something. Come under my wing. You know, I would have a lot of that happening to me early on, where they saw what I can do. And they saw that was so unique and so like, you know, out of the box, you know, compared to what was out there at the time, you know? And so, I had like people who, again, thought that they could game me, but I already came with the games, you know, so it was almost like, oh, sure, okay, you know, so yeah, I already came with the games, so you can't out-game the gamer. So it was always very interesting how some people would approach me with like opportunities. Or situations like, oh, we should collab together, when really I know how to write, not knocking people who don't know how to write music, but really they wanted the muscle, which would be me, and they would be the you know, the show, you know? And I was like, I see through that. It's like, you know, that kind of thing. And I came with the education behind it in that I taught myself the business enough to know I did not want things like record labels, and people would say, oh, you need a record label. It's like, no, I don't, because I know it's not beneficial to an artist, you know, it really isn't. Like publishing is, but the rest of it, no thanks, you know. So
if you're happy doing it the way you're doing it, and you're, you know, it's like you don't sit around thinking, oh, I need this, you just make things happen for yourself as best you can. And that's awesome. That's so cool.
And I was just gonna say I love the fact that technology has been the game changer for everyone. And I think had it not been for the internet, like, there wouldn't have been, you know, a lot of things, and definitely I guess my musical career would not have gone probably anywhere, quite honestly. Just being able to get my music out to people from, you know, everywhere out in the world, when really somebody who, again, looks like me and makes music the way that I do, there would have been so many gatekeepers out there like, oh no, let's, how about you do this? Or how about, you know, we have you do whatever, you know, that kind of thing. So I just wouldn't compromise.
That's wonderful. Yeah. And for somebody like you that's not intimidated by it and like enjoys kind of like the research part of it and the figuring things out. And like, you know, you see it's like just something as simple as like Bandcamp. What's Bandcamp? Well, I want my music on Bandcamp. You figure it out and you do it. And yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, you do a good bit of like recording, home recording also, right?
Yeah, I tried. I tried going to a studio a few years ago. I do have new material. I really do. It's just been sitting on it for a while, some years now. See, slow. But I don't know. I've learned how to record myself, and I have, I guess, my quirks and what I know works for me. So, you know, part of the delay had been like, you know, just doing some domestic things around the house. Like I live in a big super, you know, so it was time to get some things done. And I think I'm kind of now at a better place where some recording can now begin. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't ever not want to record. I think I've learned so much on my own that, again, some of those first encounters with going to a studio to get things mastered and they're telling me how I'm supposed to sound. And I'm like, no, I recorded this. I'm telling you how it's supposed to. You know, that kind of pushback mentality, that elitism that comes with a lot of people in the industry sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, I'll just learn some things.
No, that's never, ever fun. So, you know, we talked a little bit about the kimono thing and everything, you know, and that obviously came to be because of just the turmoil of the past year and COVID and everything. So, like how has that been going for you? Like, do you feel like have creative projects been more of a chore over the past year, or have they come easier, or have you found it no different for you really?
Well, I mean, I'm definitely grateful for kimono. That was a great outlet because, again, as you know, in three different bands and teaching music, I was doing a lot. And I guess it took maybe just stopping to realize like, oh, wow, I'm doing a lot, which I was enjoying. It wasn't like it was all horrible and, you know, all of that, but it gave me time to just think about other things that, you know, hadn't been, you know, thinking about and addressing in my life in general. And when it came to creative things, maybe, yeah, again, just kind of, I don't want to say putting it away, but just getting really digging deep on other aspects of my life that, again, I really needed to think about and address. And I do want to get back into music. I am getting back into music, but I also, through other, I guess, other pursuits, I've been looking into different ways to make Nerd Queen, I don't want to say fresh and new, but grow as I've been growing. In that, you know, there's that, and I purposely sent you the instrumental track where, again, I do compose and I do kind of avant-garde type things. So I want to be able to go into, I don't want to say spiritual, but more, and I don't even want to say new agey either, just learning how to play other instruments. Like I've always wanted to learn to play the harmonium, which is an Indian style kind of tiny piano kind of thing. It has that, you know, very distinct sound. Also, again, being African American, I wanted to maybe even research more African instruments, and, you know, just find more authentic for me ways to express myself, even going into like learning how to play crystal bowls, you know, that kind of thing. So I'm just looking more into that, where it kind of does play into the Nerd Queen thing, because I play the radio, you know, so I play with sound, and I just, you know, I it it was a nice way for me to stop a little bit and to rethink, like, how can I incorporate more of what I'm growing as a person back into my music? I'm not just this one trick pony kind of person. Mm-hmm. Like, I am also growing as a person. So maybe I want to incorporate more of that, you know, again, going back to the hills and the holler, going researching my roots and going even deeper. Like, I want, you know, even more like exoticness, more, you know, instruments that I don't know, my ancestors literally played, you know, so that kind of seeking that I'm looking into.
That's awesome. And I find that almost always very, very beneficial to, if you can allow yourself to kind of step back from something, especially if you feel like it's sort of been like just rolling along in autopilot, and you find that like, well, I'm doing it this way because I've always done it this way. If you're able to just kind of put the brakes on it for a minute and step back, then you probably can pretty easily realize that, oh, what I really want to do is this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's great. That's very cool. So what about like the past year, COVID aside, you know, there's been so much just from kind of a socio-political standpoint with Black Lives Matter and everything, right?
Yeah.
And I think this is my white girl perspective on it, and I'm super interested in yours. Mm-hmm. To me, it seems like we're finally starting to look at some hard truths. When I say we collectively, a lot of us are, you know, I can't speak for every single person, obviously, but, and we're finally starting to like just start reckoning with them and being honest about them. I tend to look at things, I think, from a glasses half full perspective. And I'm just really curious, like, do you feel like that too? Like, do you feel like we're making any progress at all? Because I know the last year has probably been pretty tough.
Yeah. I mean, my day job, I'm a teacher at a school where we've been doing this work for years, quite honestly. Just social justice in general, uh-huh. Not just for race, but for gender equality and disability, ableism, you know, those kinds of things, economics, you know, status. Like, I feel like from where I have been in a sense working at this particular school, one of the reasons why I'm like, I don't want to leave, you know, is I feel like people are catching up now, if anything. And I feel like because of the events of, you know, this past summer, people had no choice but to not be distracted by other things. And I'm just going to go ahead and be blunt, even when we were doing this work at our school, we would be put into, think of it like a think tank, but for social issues, whatever the issue was. And sometimes we'd talk about race, sometimes we'd talk about economic hardships, you know, in how to deal with that in a general public and in a classroom, you know. So my experience had always been when it came to people who don't look like me, who are white, would usually try to avoid the conversation, even though that's exactly what we're supposed to be talking about, you know, in our little, when we get broken up into little groups. I hate to say, almost make it a game. Like, I wonder how fast they're going to try to change the subject and talk about something else, you know, because it's uncomfortable. And that's something that me being around a lot of people who don't look like me tend to avoid things, even though they know it is happening. Has learned the art and craft of artfully dodging uncomfortable things and uncomfortable subjects. But yeah, since the murder of George Floyd, you could not avoid it. You could not run away. It had to be seen finally, you know, at least that, and amongst many, many others who are, you know, tortured and terrorized in not only in America, but around the world. It turned into a global thing, and it made it, 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 it warmed my heart when I saw things like the Maori tribes in New Zealand giving hakas for Black Lives Matter. It was like, this is the revolution. This is it. People are finally, on so many levels, took this movement and made it their own in their own way, because it's not just here in America. There was, you know, that colonialism that you know, changed the world in the last 150 years, that, as they say, the chickens are coming home to roost. You know, people now have to, you know, I don't want to say atone, but they now have to face the fact of there's a reason why certain countries are rich and others are not. And there's a reason why certain people have certain privileges and others do not. And I'm not looking for anyone to feel blamed or guilty or anything like that. It's just having that, start that conversation so that we can start moving forward. I'm always open for the conversation, and it's never my point or purpose to shame anyone or to guilt anyone or to punish anyone. We all ended up in this through a series of events that happened generations upon generations ago, and now we just have to deal with what is in front of us now, hopefully without any shame. And as a creative person, or as a teacher, really, as a teacher and a facilitator, I can, you know, definitely talk with more people. I've had, you know, situations where people are panicked, like, oh, what kind of books do I read? What do I, am I saying the right thing? Am I doing the right thing? I was like, look, just be open and honest. Come with the perspective of the skin that you are in, and your truth is the truth. You know, so as long as we can, you know, just keep a discussion, a real discussion, and then rather than a, you know, like a you're right and you're wrong kind of mentality, things can move forward. I think in the end, everybody just wants to be happy. And that's kind of where I come from with any and all of this. It's like, some people weren't happy how things were, and some people were happy denying other people. And now there's opportunity for more people to have a seat at the table and to have happiness. It's not taking something if you're just opening it up to more people.
Absolutely. That is really beautiful. And thank you. I was going to ask you, but you pretty much answered it, because I was going to ask you, you know, from somebody like me who wants to be an ally, if like what would you say? And I guess, so if you have anything to add, please do. But that was, it sounded like you pretty much answered it.
Yeah. And I think, I guess my advice also would be, again, because I've been doing this, you know, work as an adult, but growing up doing this work also, because, you know, I don't want to say my dad was a Black Panther or anything, but he definitely was one of those revolutionary, you know, Black Power types, you know, from the beginning. So I knew growing up, all, you know, a lot of things that people who are at my age right now and older are just realizing how deep, you know, a lot of mistreatment is of people who look like me, and how deep it runs. There is a lot of resentment when it comes to people who might look like me, where just resentment, just knowing that now people are paying attention and not trusting. So I'll just say, while some people are open to the conversation, there are going to be lots of people who are not open to the conversation, simply because sometimes things like this have happened before and you can't trust. It's, you know, just like, oh, well, you know, until the next time, until the next shooting, until the next arrest, until the next beating, until the next, you know, where they, you know, they just don't have that trust, and they have every right to, you know, believe that. So I will say, walk gently when it comes to others who have, you know, brown skin. They may have a different viewpoint of all of this opening up to people where you may come with a genuine heart, they might not trust you right away. And
yeah,
you don't, I don't know. Yeah. So just know that there's people who are guarding themselves. It's not even a matter of just hating. It's like guarding themselves because it's a hard thing to live in a society where you can't trust people on a certain level to keep you safe, to ensure your livelihood, you know? So yeah, that's where some people are going to, you know, come with that. So yeah. I would just say, just tread lightly and just, you know that some people might not trust.
Yeah, I totally understand that. I mean, it's the distrust, unfortunately, I think is very valid, you know, and yeah, I mean, there's so much to say, you know, it's so big, and I appreciate your honesty and just your being open, and you seem far more patient than probably many people deserve. So
yeah, like I said, I've been doing this for a while. I've been in situations where I was the only one that looked like me growing up a lot. And so I've learned to navigate through that kind of world. And I'm glad jumping back into the music realm. There are younger, you know, I guess I'm 45. Yeah, there are younger kids out there now that the movement is swelling, and there are people who are people of color who are into rock and pop and, you know, all these other forms of music is opening up more and more mainstream. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful to see. And I'm glad, you know, so there is that.
That's true. Things like that, it spills over. And it's like it spills over into the art world, I think, just and being open to things a little different. Mm-hmm. And then the art world, you know, influences life.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. They influence each other. All right. Well, this has been a joy, as it always is, hanging out with you. Hopefully we can do it in person before too long. But thank you so much for taking the time, and best of luck with everything, all your creative pursuits. I'm such a fan. They're all wonderful. So.
Yeah. Same for you. You're also actually, I mean, you're one of my heroes, so you're always doing stuff. Like, I don't know. Like, I think I built up when I saw how you're doing so much, you know, back in the day, I was like, I want to be like Kim. I want to do stuff, a lot of stuff. So.
You know, it's fun to do stuff. I don't know. I guess I've just always had this. I think I've always kind of had a fear that time was going to run out and that I was not going to have all the things done that I wanted to do. So I've slowed down in some ways, but this has been good. Like, just this project has been a great way to just keep me in contact with people and keep me learning. And yeah, it's been really, really fun. So yeah, thanks. I appreciate you being a part of it so much.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
All right. Take care, Monica.
Okay, you too.
Talk to you later.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that cool? I want to make a t-shirt that says Monica Arrington is cooler than you. Not that you aren't cool, but damn. So you might have noticed in that episode, we talked a good bit about Monica's vocals, but we also talked a bit about her wanting to sort of reevaluate what Nerd Queen is and how she wants to present herself and all that. And so I think that's why she wanted to share this particular song with us, because it's obviously more about the composing and the shaping of the soundscapes, which I'm thinking that's a direction she wants to go in even more. But that said, Monica is such an amazing singer. So if you haven't heard her music, please do check her out on Bandcamp, nerdqueen.bandcamp.com. And that's K-W-E-E-N is how she spells the queen part, Nerd Queen. Or look her up on any of the streaming sites that you happen to subscribe to or use or whatever, but do support her. She's so different and just beautiful and amazing. So Monica, so much thanks again, just for your presence. It is so appreciated, and thank you all so much for listening.